Yeah, an alcoholic. Tells me here that I made this list when I took inventory of people that I've harmed. So one of the things that I do when I'm working with people is I have them do their first column first, and I just say, I tell them, pray, and don't be too concerned why the name comes. Just write it down if it creates tension or heat. Right? Tends to create an enormous list, or a much bigger one than what they need for the fourth step. We start trimming it down, and, you know, is it really a resentment? But we have this bigger list of names, and I have them go back to that at this point for the eighth step to start making these cards. I tell them to take a name off the list where they see harm and fill out a card, an index card on each person. And the reason we do index cards instead of just lists is because you can thumb through the cards and ask God to show you which is the next indicated amends to make. All right. But before we get to that, after they make the cards, I like to actually sit with them and listen to the harms. There's one thing I look for, and that's what I call goofy amends. There's nothing worse than someone coming up to you and making amends for something that's really stupid. The idea here, though, is to get clear. Did I really harm somebody? Right? If I take all those names off that first column, there's plenty of people there that maybe it's just in my head I thought more of the situation than what was really there. So sitting with someone that I trust and reading those to them and discussing each one of those and the perceived harm, and, you know, we ask, you know, will this cause more harm than the amends will mend? Right? I also talk about the difference between what an amends is and what an apology is. Right? An apology is just a gesture to clear the air for some reason, but doesn't necessarily state any responsibility for or any offering of anything to change. Just clearing the air for some reason so you don't have to feel guilty. Right? Hasn't mended anything. But an amend is a sincere desire to set right a wrong from the past and to change the behavior in the future, to mend what I have done. And in order to do that, I don't tell them what has to happen for that to take place. I ask them, you know, what I can do to set right that wrong. It's a scary, scary thing to look at, to come in when you're new and to look up on the walls at meetings and I don't know if you were anything like me. I was in a real hurry to get this thing, and I was sure by reading them. Yeah, I know step one, and yeah, I know step two. I haven't done anything. I haven't even picked up the big book yet. But I'm reading all these things, thinking that I'm there. But you get to step nine, and you go, I'm not going to do that one. Right? But then you get the people that get all the way up to that point, and they come across names that they're not, absolutely not going to do, or don't think they can do, or start to develop this idea in the back of their head that I'm going to do everything but that, and I'm not going to tell anybody that I'm not going to do that. You've had a couple of those, huh? What I do is have them go and sit down with the cards after we've narrowed it down to the specific harms, make three piles when they're in front of me. Amends I'm willing to make. Amends I'm not willing to make. And the center stack is to pray about it. Because I don't tell someone just pull that out or throw it away usually. We mark little notes on it. You know, we put a question mark if it's, you know, consider maybe you don't need to do this one. Or pray about this one, maybe you better leave this alone. And I leave it up to them and prayer to actually come up with the final cards they actually do. And as they're going through the cards, to put a little plus or minus in the corner, ones I'm willing to make now, another stack of ones that I'm, actually two stacks of ones I'm willing to make, ones that I'm willing to make locally and ones that I'm willing to make that aren't local, right? And then the other stack, ones that I'm never, at this point, I'm never going to make or not willing currently to make, right? Instead of getting stuck and focusing on what you're not willing to do, look at the ones you are willing to do, right? And start doing the ones you're willing to do. It's kind of like going to the gym. You see the guy in the corner with the big, huge, giant weights, and I'm thinking, yeah, I'd like to do that, but I know it's kind of dumb for me to start off there, right? So I start off at the other end, you know, with the little weights. You know, I do what I could do, and don't get like bound by this wall of things that I am not willing to do. But what happens when you go to the gym? You start off at this end, and you start working your way down to the heavier weights, and the heavier weights, and the heavier weights. And that was my experience with step 8. You start doing the ones you can do. You get a little bit more power to do the next one. Thumb through the cards. Which is the next indicated amends? Right? And trust that this is the one that I need to do. If there's any reason that you're not gonna, that comes to you that you shouldn't do it, put it at the bottom of the stack. Find the one you're willing to make. I'm gonna talk about step 8 primarily first. And there's, the book bunches them together. But most people stay more in step 8 than they do in 9. Right? You know when you're in step 9. Right. Yeah, we were in my home group. We were talking about step 9, and this guy named GW posed the statement to the group. He says, "You know, it makes a noise when you flip from step 8 to step 9. It makes a sound," and everybody just kind of looked at him like, "What?" And he says, "Yeah, it sounds like this." Most of you will spend more time on the other side of that sound in step 8. My ego wants to tell you I'm in step 9. So why do we spend so much time in step 8? You have the cards, right? You've gone through them. Here's the list that we're going to do. When you hear things like, "Well, I'm praying for the willingness, for the willingness, for the willingness..." For the willingness to do these, maybe the problem is incorrect prayer. Incorrect prayer. You know, different meditation practices, different prayer practices, they have certain postures, you know. Some meditations will say, have your palms up so the energy can come on through your hands and out your feet. And some will have you close your thumb with your first finger or put your hands together or... There's all different kinds of postures for different types of prayer, but there's a 9-step prayer posture. There's a 9-step posture for prayer. Right? And here's the way it goes. You sit at a chair at a desk, feet flat on the ground, back straight, the card in front of you of the person that you need to make an appointment with. Pick up the phone and put it to your head. Right? Dial and then pray. It's simple. Right? Because if you're not willing to even make the appointment, then you got to look even deeper than that. Right? You know, I could say The easiest way to do it is to say, "Well, remember, in the 9-step, it reminds me that in the beginning, I was willing to go to any length for victory over alcoholism." And you could back up right through the steps and see that one is on the other side of me not making... Step one is on the other side of me not wanting to make the amends. Right? But that's like a canned answer, and you've probably already heard that said before. Oh, yeah, it's about drinking, you know. What I see here is that it's about fear. And I don't know that even if there's easy amends that don't have a little element of fear when you have to face someone that you've harmed. Right? But that fear can just stop you. Right? Stops you. There's people at meetings that will tell you you're never going to finish amends. You know what they're saying? I was too fearful to finish amends. Right? So if I get everybody around me to not finish amends, you know, then I'll be just like everyone else. I fell into a group where, you know, that was the first thing they said when they see you. They said, "Where are you at with your amends?" Right? Walking to the meeting, if you have people behind you, I remember my sponsor and his friend walking behind me, asking me these questions and hammering me, going, "What about that last amend?" You know? And it wasn't because they were just picking on me, it's because they knew what it was like to finish amends. And I think that it's important to know that anybody that has finished amends would encourage you to finish amends. You start with the ones you can do, and then you do the next one, and then the next one. And what happens is you burn through all the ones you could self-will at first. Right? Yeah, I prayed. Right? But there's this element of, yeah, I can do this one, I can do this one, I can do this one. And then you're getting further and further down the list. You know, to the ones that you got your head on the floor, on the desk saying, "I can't do this one. I can't do this one." Right? And those are the ones that become more beneficial. And those are the ones that willingness comes harder. Those are the ones that I have to have more power. Right? But I just pray and ask for the next indicated amends, you know, and focus on that one. And what happens through that process is that each step of the way, the harder the amends get, the deeper my reliance on God had to be. Those are the ones that I told myself that I would never, ever, ever do. And now I'm faced with, I've done all the other ones, and now this is the one that's popping up. This is the one that's the next indicated amends. And what I find is those are the ones that get you sitting in your car with your head on your steering wheel thinking, "God, I'm taking this thing way too far." When I made amends to my ex-wife, I remember sitting there with my head on the steering wheel outside her place, hoping that she didn't peek out the window, seeing me sitting there with my head on the steering wheel, because I had really hurt her in ways that I later found out that I wasn't even aware of. And when I'm sitting in that car, I've already made the appointment, still praying for the willingness to get out of the car. I haven't even got to 9 yet. I'm still sitting in some fear. Right? In step 8, still getting the willingness to carry through with this the process that's in front of me. Right? But I know from the ones that I have previously done that the power will come. That it's not just about praying in advance for it a week before for the willingness to make the amends the following week. Right? I talked about it earlier when I was talking about meditation, how I said I'd do 16-hour meditation. Right? This is about bringing God into all of my activities. Right? This is about praying while I'm walking to the door for the courage to go through with this, all the way to the point where I'm knocking on the door, right, and being able to sit face to face with someone and say, "I'm in this program, and through this process, I've been made aware of some things that I wasn't clear on prior to looking at this. And I see certain things, certain ways that I've harmed you. And is it okay if I tell you what those are? And naturally, she was uncomfortable because she didn't know what was going to come. And I told her the things that I was aware of. And my next question is there anything that I haven't been clear on that I didn't say that you need to tell me about? Any other ways that I've harmed you that I don't have on my list? You know, and then I sat and listened for 45 minutes or... Now, you know when they get it all out because they start repeating themselves.
Okay. Right? Stop them.
No, you listen again. You don't stop them. Because you got to understand that that's one of the things that gets them free of it. Because this is not just about me. Because as they're repeating themselves, and they see they're repeating themselves, they realize that they've gotten everything out that they need to tell you. They may think of things later. That's another issue. But the fact is that once they've seen that they've told you everything that they can think of about how you harmed them, something happens. And then I follow that up with, is there anything else that you need to tell me? Right. You know, and in this case, it went on a little longer. But really, it was more of the same stuff. Right. And I follow that up with, is there any way that I could possibly make right the wrongs that I've caused you? Anything that you could think of that I can set right these wrongs? And then I let her tell me what she needs to say. But I go into it willing to do whatever she asks to set right the wrong with her. And the main thing that happened at that point is that she got free of some stuff that was torturing her for many, many years. Cleared up some things about the relationship that she didn't understand. You know, the things that went on while I was drinking and not coming home, and you know, the way I was behaving, and she got to tell me how that affected her and what went on inside of her when that was happening. Things that were eating her up for a long time. And she got free. To go in there expecting something for myself was not the point. Right? There was other amends too that I had made. My family was in a probate situation, a will contest. And the whole other side of the family was against us. You know, and certainly I felt that they had harmed me much more than I had done to them. Talks about in the book, we go into them expressing our regret. Okay, here it is. Nevertheless, with the person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit. Doesn't say we forgive them. It says we go to them in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feelings and expressing our regret. And I had to go to these family members who certainly, even though we had a long relationship, a close family, money became thicker than blood. All right. So to go to them and tell them I forgive them for that was difficult. But I could say, what came to me in prayer was, is that I could honestly say I regret what happened to our relationship. And I went to them in a loving spirit, loving and forgiving spirit, explained to them how I regret what happened to our family and how this tore up our family. Right? And we all are in contact now, since then. You know, it's not like what it used to be, you know, but it's, you know, there was a way to approach that where the family mended. by the time I got to the ninth step, a lot of the people who I hurt the most had passed away. My mother and my grandmother. So and my grandfather. So I had the experience of graveside amends. And I had an amazing experience with that. What I suggest to people is if you have a picture, take it with you. Right? Some people like to write a letter. I don't. I just bring the card, just like I would go to anybody else. And basically what it looks like is I set the picture on top of the grave, you know, and sit quietly and meditate for a few minutes till I'm ready. And then ask God to guide the experience. And then I read the card just like I would if they were face to face with me. And after each one of those questions, I pause and listen. And it was amazing what had come from that. Because I got, you know, I had intuition and inspiration as far as what, you know, it was almost as if they were there talking to me, telling me what words that I could, it's, you know, and you can rationalize it and try to explain it off to, you know, just coincidence and how I knew that they would respond or how I wanted them to respond or, and not trust whether it was God or not. Because, you know, was it odd or was it God? I don't know. But there was a deep sense that I heard their words and what they would have me do to straighten out the wrongs that I had done. One of the things that I had done is I had taken a lot of money near the end of my drinking to survive because I wasn't working. And I was supposed to be taking care of this for my grandmother. When the question was, what can I do to set right that wrong? The words came that she doesn't need the money anymore, that the people that are harmed now is the beneficiaries. And it wasn't what I wanted to hear. But that directed me towards going to the people who suffered the loss of what I had pulled out to live on. So I had to make those amends to my brothers, telling them what I had done, right, and asking them what they would have me do to set it right. My last amends happened to be the IRS, and I got really hung up on that. You know, it's like I don't have enough money to pay them, and you know, my head started going like, you know, it's like they don't need my money. You know, besides, it's taxes aren't really, they don't, you know, they don't deserve to get it. It's my money, right? Somebody pointed out that it's not my money, it's their money that I'm hanging on to and refusing to give back. And that was like my last amends. I hung on to it and hung on to it. But again, being in a home group that didn't let me not take it seriously, I got hammered for it. I wasn't allowed to just excuse it away. Not without paying the price of their comments. So finally, I went and I got an accountant to look at the situation. And I got to tell you, I sat on this thing for over a year, this one amend. Fear just completely blocked me from looking at it, from trying to do anything with it. Accountant looked at it and said, well, it looks like you owe $300. You got all this here? And I was thinking, like, tens of thousands of dollars, but, you know, and it was like, you know, it was fear. It was all fear. So I straightened all that up. It was about 5 years of filing, which kind of gives you a picture of what my last 5 years looked like. But I had my own business. That makes it worse, right? Because $300 and having your own business. And I guess it was a lot bigger in my head than in reality. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been having to sift money out of family's accounts to survive. But I have my own business. I see how much fear plays a big part in this thing, and how the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Was it Winston Churchill? Oh, okay. Did Kennedy repeat it?
Probably.
I know I heard it from some politician. Anyway, fear plays such a big part in this thing and blocking you from finishing this amends. But you know, when I finally finished that last amends, I thought I was done. Went to my sponsor, said I did it. I finished the last amends. You know, he had another instruction for me. He says, go back and pray and ask for any other harms that you didn't take care of. If there's anything left, pray about it and come back and tell me when you're completely finished with every single thing. And nothing else came. I went to him and he gave me instructions for 10 and 11. You know, I went about 3 months after that, and I was feeling a little funny. You know how I thought I was getting sick. My head was a little, wasn't right. You know how just before you get the flu, it's a little spacey, can't think straight? 3 months, almost 4 months started, you know, went by. I was starting to worry, and I thought, you know, what's going on? And it came to me, what was happening. I had a quiet mind. And it wasn't that anything was wrong. It was that nothing was wrong. I mean, that I had cleared up everything that I could possibly clear up, done everything I could do to get clear on all of this, the resentments, became completely willing to turn to God with all of this stuff, was encouraged to pursue meditative paths, and I was moved into a place that I absolutely never experienced. So for me to tell someone that they can't finish amends or that they don't need to, I can't do that, because I've experienced what can happen as a result of it. Right? And as a result of making all of those last amends that I told myself I couldn't do, I developed an incredible amount of faith that there's a power deep down inside me that I can call on, that will work through me. And I wouldn't have seen that if I had shoved some of those amends aside and said, I'm not going to do those. Those are going to hurt me too much. Right? You know, and I robbed myself of that experience. It says in the book, he made amends to them all. Right? I think they knew what would happen if you make amends to them all. Right? And right after that, the meditation got a lot better with a quiet mind. Yeah, I guess you can imagine why. Right? But more important than any of it, though, is I saw that when I really needed God most, that the power came. And that ninth step proved that to me. From that cleared place, I saw that the devastation on my spirit that new resentments can cause. And how when you are at that place, when you're clear of all that stuff, you know, the idea that I lived that way, it's hard to fathom ever going back to that. The bigger thing to be aware of is that I can't judge my experience by what I think that should look like, right? Because you hear a lot of people thinking that maybe they didn't get what somebody else got, right? And judging your outsides by the way I feel inside, when I have to see that I have my own situations and my own demons to confront. And I need to, you know, maybe new inventory comes up, maybe new things that haven't got cleared up, maybe I didn't get the right second column You know, new things will come up. And so when it talks about the ninth step promises and how those things will manifest in our lives if we work towards them, working towards them to me means continuing to work towards clearing away the things that block me. This is not a destination, it's a path. And it goes back to the idea of that relationship and how willing am I to continue to turn to God for the courage to look at these things and to do what has to be done and to continually take the high road.
Thank you.
I just want to cut and announce a couple things.
To order recordings or the Big Book Awakening 12-Step Guidebook, go to bigbookawakening.com or call 310-395-1797.